Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
And thank you, Alec Webb. Hi, I am John Davis, host of MotorWeek on public television and on Velocity, where I'm happy to say welcome to our podcast number 80. It's a very special podcast for lots of reasons. One of them is we've got almost a full house today, and I'm starting with executive producer Brian Roberts.
Hello.
Producer, writer, and two-wheeling reporter Brian Robinson.
That's me.
Associate producer Ben Davis.
Present.
And assistant producer Greg Carlos.
Hey, hey.
All right, we'll have our lightning round, we'll have our mailbag, all of that stuff, but basically we're going to look at a couple of cars after we talk about the main topic, which is the 2013 North American International Auto Show in Detroit. Brian and I are fresh back from press days, and everybody else around the table's got their comments about what they saw coming down the internet that's new at the show. We might as well start where the obvious place is. There was one car at the show that captivated everybody's attention. It was the rock star of the show, and that was the premiere of the 2014 Chevrolet Corvette, dubbed Stingray. If you haven't seen it, you've probably been living under a rock very quickly. Proportions are similar to the old car, but styling is vastly different on the C7 from the C6 or C5. A little bit of Ferrari maybe in the front end. There's some sharpness to it, lots of vents that all work. Great-looking interior, very cockpit-like, 450 horsepower V8, 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds. And with that said, Brian, you were there for the unveiling. What's your thoughts?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, it was certainly the coming-out party for the C7. You know, I was there for the unveiling the night before the press days, and it was quite a party. And what a car, the new styling. It's pretty sharp. You know, some folks may not like it. You know, obviously with any new generation Corvette, there's going to be some people who really like the styling and some who don't. You know, the trapezoidal taillights, similar kind of to the Camaro a little bit. But when I first saw it, I had a nice, I was perched pretty high. It kind of reminded me a little bit of...
You're talking about where you were seated,
yeah, where
not
I was,
how you felt.
Yeah, yeah, correct. I was looking down on it, and you know, first thing I thought of at one of the angles was a very Ferrari-like certain aspects of it. You know, and it... I was really impressed with it.
Did you lie inside at all?
No, I didn't.
Well, I mean, I looked at
it,
and
yeah.
It's certainly much better than the C6.
I mean,
yes.
I love the fact that it looks more muscular, but that's my only question is, I mean, the interior looks great, but like most GM stuff, once you get in, is it going?
The seats.
It's a lot nicer, you know, but certainly not 911 quality interior.
There were two seats. There's a competition seat and a regular seat. They both look competition style, but of course, till you sit in them a while, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth noting that this car has got a lot of high-tech build in it, more aluminum in the frame, real carbon fiber
panels
in the roof and in the hood panel. And so they've built a car that they've got to live with for 7 or 8 years.
No doubt. I mean, it's an all-new 6.2-liter, you know, pushrod V8, 450 horsepower.
You know, but with, you know, variable valve timing continuously. And
seven-cylinder deactivation.
Direct fuel injection. Yeah, I mean, it's got all the bells and whistles.
And then, you bump up to the performance model, the Z51, you know, shorter gearing, magnetic ride, stiffer leaf springs, stuff like that. So. Yes.
Well, it's always had that one, you know, the I guess it's probably like the last car being made that's got a leaf spring suspension, but people don't get it. It's a transverse leaf spring.
Yeah.
All right, Benny, you watched it from afar. You told me this morning you spent 3 hours sitting in bed last night, and I'm sure your wife didn't appreciate that.
researching
the car. She was long asleep. Yeah, when I originally saw it. I was a bacon apple pie and getting some fireworks ready to shoot off and celebrate all things American. Then the pictures came through and I saw those taillights and I wasn't upset. I wasn't mad at Chevy for doing it. I was heartfeltly disappointed that it looked so much like the Camaro and that all these years of tradition of having round taillights or close to round taillights, all of a sudden these taillights are the furthest thing from round I've ever seen in my life. And
they ain't round.
It kept me up.
You do have the 4-round exhaust underneath, though.
When you're talking Corvette, things don't change.
Pictures don't do it justice.
Things don't change. Corvette diehards out there, a similar thing happened in 95 when the Mustang came out with tri-bar taillights and they were horizontal. There was such an uproar. Next year they were vertical. I guarantee this is going to happen next year. We're going to have round taillights back in there.
You heard that here.
On all the Corvette forums.
You heard it here first, GM.
I saw pictures on Corvette forums. Some guy had taken and put round taillights on the C7 on one side and left the stock on the other side just so you could see what it looked like. World's better. It almost looks like an F40.
Yeah, the GM forums right now are a scary place to be. I mean, there's just people going, well, you've got the purists who are saying, you know, it's an abomination to go to the Camaro taillights. But then you've got the people, and even like myself, I've never been a diehard Corvette fan, who are like, yeah, it looks pretty good. Me, save for the rear, because I actually don't like the Camaro-style taillights. But it appeals more to the non-Corvette fan, you know. But the purists are always going to say, you got to stick with what it's always been. But
what else are the purists saying about it?
They like the front end.
They like the basic
it's
look
the main it. Gripe that I've seen is just the rear end.
I see. I don't like the front grille with the chrome strip in there and the plastic mesh.
And we didn't notice that.
I didn't think that was offensive.
Oh, did man. Not even see it. I mean, it's there.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Like the
when
last
you,
thing
when you see it in for you know in
that's
person,
possible.
It's a lot
just going by the pictures, it looks like they robbed parts off of a Sebring.
I'll say that almost none of this is going to matter once we actually get to drive the thing.
Yeah. A true story, but that's all I got to go on is pics. One more thing I got to gripe on real fast. Inside, beautiful, beautiful inside, no doubt there. But the air vents, the heat and air conditioning vents inside the car, they look a little parts bin to me. But that's,
again, because they're not round, but because they're sort of like this odd shape.
And they look a little, right. Like I've seen them before, they're a little too familiar. And yeah, but that's just because I studied the pictures for so long.
It's pretty
long
clear that Ben likes circles. Can we all agree?
The car needs circles,
yeah.
Man.
Well, it's got four big rubber ones that go pretty
I'm,
well.
I'm just glad Elvis isn't around to see this.
Yeah. I guess it's going to be probably towards the summer before we actually get a chance to drive one. But when we do, we'll all convene back around this table and we'll have this discussion again. Let's get back to the auto show. Brian, what else caught your eye, good or bad, at the auto show? Let me throw this one to you. What was the ugliest car at the auto show?
Oh, the ugly. Well,
I should use
that word ugly.
And recognizing that that's a matter of taste.
Let's say one of them I thought looked like a locomotive. Very big, large front end. It was the Hyundai concept, which apparently CEO John Krafcek said is not the concept version of the next Genesis.
It's called the HCD14, yeah. And they stressed.
It was very bulky.
It was long, long hoods, yeah. Rear drive. With a V8, but just it was massive in the front.
Yeah,
big, massive vertical grille.
I like the Atlas concept. The
Ford F-150 preview.
Yeah, a lot of the same technology that was in the Atlas that will be on the next F-150. And I think one of the coolest things is the some new towing features. One of them is a backup assist, which will help. People who are towing press a button, and it kind of it helps you
centers you with the hitch.
It helps. Yeah. No, that's the dynamic hitch assist.
That's different.
That uses a 360 camera that helps you hitch up. But then the backup assist basically is like an automated parking system, but with a trailer. You press a button, and all you do is step on the throttle.
Oh, it actually helps you,
back the trailer, which we could all use.
I don't know if you've seen the dent on the passenger side of my pickup in the back. That's where that came from.
So there you go.
I was so embarrassed the last time I was took the trailer back to the rental place. They finally just had me leave it in the parking lot and
nice.
Leave.
I really like the new Toyota concept, which is going to be
really?
The next generation Corolla. Well, the Corolla,
the Corolla
needs something,
Furia?
Obviously.
Well,
it
needs something.
I mean,
let's face it. It was a very advanced looking
for the
corridor, considering what they've got now.
Yes. So,
I liked the Honda Urban SUV concept. I thought that was... That was what I thought the Acura RDX should have looked like. And they say this is very close to production. It's based
derived
on
the from
fit.
The fit.
Very good looking. And I actually, over at Lincoln, the MKC, which is their escape-based compact,
well,
I thought
really
it looked terrific.
Absolutely.
And although I think that's probably going to be further from what we really see than
the
Honda was.
Honda. Was that like element size? Or was it
no, it's 9 inches smaller than a CRV.
Yeah. It's fit. It's based on the fit, and looks like it. Yeah, I would say, you know, I don't know. I didn't look at the measurements, but I would imagine it can't be too much smaller than the Element. But it's really slick looking. A lot more character lines in the
really
body,
good.
And they swear it's real close to production. But production is like over a year away, so it's unusual for them to be showing one so far out.
We haven't even talked about the Silverado yet. What about the Ford?
You know, it's funny. Silverado and GMC Sierra, they announced, of course, all new pickups back in December. And they sort of – and that was the reason I think Ford was showing
that's why they brought
its
up
F-150
the
concept for 2015, kind of overshadow it. But they were nice looking. I mean, they're very brutish looking. They've got all high-tech new powertrains. The interior, I thought, was a huge improvement. Some really clever little things that you don't have to spend a lot of money for. And that worries me about some of the stuff on the Ford truck, how much it'll cost. But they've got really convenient, like, footholds in the corners of the rear bumper and handles up on the box so you can haul yourself up on the box real easy. So I think it seems clear to me that we have three distinct trucks out there. We've got the Ram, which is more aimed at the pleasure buyer. We've got the Silverado, which, of course, wants to be a real work truck. And then we got Ford, who's probably covering the bases because of the king of the bill. But I liked what I saw the Chevy. I like the fact that the extended cab doors now open like normal doors. I like the fact they've got considerable more rear leg room in all their cabs. I think they have done a truck that's very commendable. But they didn't do a lot of bells and whistles fuel economy oriented engines and stuff, although all the new engines have direct injection. I think they've all got cylinder deactivation and variable valve timing. Matter of fact, the V8 the Corvette's 8-cylinder, it's based on the same engine that's in the new Sierra, the new V8 for the Silverado, rather, and Sierra.
Another vehicle, Jeep, they showed the Grand Cherokee, which for the first time ever, gets the diesel option, which will get up to 30 miles.
No, it had it before. Had it before. This is a different engine, though. But
we
it did
one in here.
Yes, we did indeed. But they needed it on this thing. That and the 8-speed.
I think the 8-speed definitely. I don't know how many people are going to be buying diesel, but definitely the 8-speed Trans is going to help.
30 miles per gallon up to.
Okay. Did they tweak the exterior a little bit too? Is that?
They talked about it.
Front end.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You look at it and think, okay, it's all new, and then they talked about it, but it's new front end.
Yeah, it's not all new. It was just all new like 2 years ago. Right?
Yeah, but they actually did use the words all new, and I'm sitting back there saying, oh, come on, guys. But they put the big screen on the dash with the Uconnect and all that. It's a nice redo, but that 8-speed transmission, that's the big deal. Mm-hmm. And they've added a launch mode to the SRT Grand Cherokee. So they put the 8-speed in it to get a little bit better gas mileage in the launch mode so you can give it back.
That was a rough riding car.
I remember.
Yeah, that was one of the roughest riding cars we've had here in a long time. I also saw up close, and as Brian did, the new CLA for Mercedes, because we're going to have to move on to something else where we're getting to do nothing on this show but Detroit. CLA looks like the CLS, sleek four-door sedan.
Smaller than the C-Class.
Than the C-Class, and more importantly, this is their first front-wheel drive car for America under the Mercedes-Benz badge, not counting Smart.
It should come in around $30,000.
Yeah, and it was good-looking. They will have an all-wheel drive model with it. As a matter of fact, they said, 80% of all their vehicles you can get with an all-wheel drive. But nice-looking car and fairly priced, and it comes with an awful lot of Mercedes safety stuff and features standard, including, I think standard is Embrace 2, which is their OnStar-type system, and that hasn't always been that way on some of their lower-end cars. New E-Class, too, which was a refit.
A family of E-Classes.
What did you say?
Sedans, wagons.
Yeah.
I got them all.
There's so much here. You'll just have to watch Motor Week or go to our website at motorweek.org to get all the details of the North American International Auto Show. Oh, one more thing. North American Car and Truck of the Year Awards, since we're involved with that voting, the truck and utility of the year that we've changed the name of the awards this year was the Ram 1500, and the car was the ATS from Cadillac.
I can't find fault with either one of those.
Good choices.
They were good choices. It was a good group this year. Okay, we've also tested our fair share of new vehicles on Motor Week in the last month, despite the colder winter weather. Let's one that I think has been very controversial, but is apparently, according to the BMW guys, selling very well, and that's the BMW X1 Sports Activity Vehicle. Who would like to start? What do you think of the X1?
I would have liked it a lot more if they would have just called it a 3-series wagon or even 1-series wagon or whatever. Just
which is really what it looks like.
It's just barely an SUV or SAV as they call it.
SAV. Yeah.
It looks awkward. The proportions just aren't right. But once you drive it, I mean, it's everything you expect in a BMW. It handles really nice. It's got good power, regardless of whether you get the turbo 4 or the inline 6. Plenty of power. It's a nice driving vehicle, just not a lot of room, and it looks awkward.
You know, it's low. It's 6 inches lower than an X3. It's about the size of an old 3-series sedan from a couple of generations ago. And it handles pretty much like a 3-series. Benny, did you have a chance to drive it? Or
I didn't. I was out having a baby at the time, but
not you.
Wow, you personally.
that's
congratulations.
Amazing.
You were only out for a month.
It was miraculous.
But it's just between that and the Buick Encore, it's the first of many. We're going to get a whole onslaught of
ultra small,
compact, subcompact SUVs.
I think the pictures are actually deceiving because it doesn't look too awkward like you were saying in the pictures. But when I walked out and first saw it, I was like, you know, what is this thing?
It looked like the, what was that, the Subaru X90?
Oh, that, my
Suzuki.
God.
The Suzuki X90.
Suzuki, yeah.
Was it as awkward as that?
It was pretty.
It's funny.
It looks like a shoe.
I guess this stuff must be growing on me because I had that same feeling last year when I saw the Buick Encore. I thought, wow, this looks like a shoe. You know, and now when I went to I saw it again at the auto show 2 days ago, and it's like, well, all right, it looks pretty good.
It's starting to grow.
But
on
they're
you,
selling. The X1 is selling like crazy. They're selling so many of the Buick Encores, they can't keep up with the demand. So.
I saw an Aztec a couple days ago that I actually looked at a little.
Oh, God.
With a little fondness, I must be honest.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It didn't look that bad.
You've been losing sleep.
No, it'll come around. Where, like, 20 years down the road, it's going to be a real collector's item. Yeah. The
angles are bad.
The Aztec keeps coming up in those Corvette forums. They're like, it's almost as bad as, you know, Aztec.
No.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of mentions of the Aztec.
That's just mean.
It's definitely as hurtful.
It's probably the Chrysler guys riding in. Okay, another car that was in and out of our shop around the holiday seasons, the Audi S7. Everybody knows the S means sport and performance for Audi. And the S7, the A7, such a gorgeous-looking car, is the S7 that much better?
Yeah, the A7 is exactly that. It's gorgeous. So fortunately, they didn't mess that up too much. It's got some minor exterior mods, minor interior mods. The interior is gorgeous. Main thing, it's a little stiffer in the handling department, and it's got a big turbo V8 under the hood with 420 horsepower. That's the main thing. It's the S is not, it's not super performance. It's kind of like, you know, you used to have M and AMG, and now you can get M and AMG packages without getting the full M. It's kind of it's not an RS Audi. It's kind of a tweener.
It's a little confusing though. They have the S line, then they've got the S's, and
it's too much.
And now they got the RS's, and we're getting ready to test the RS5, and they showed at Detroit the RS7. So, but very nice car. If you want a little something more than just a gorgeous looking Audi, you want something with a little guts, but not too much.
Yeah, a lot of room in there. Super comfortable car for long haul.
Seats were awesome. Yeah. The diamond stitch.
Backseat headroom's a little iffy in the A7, S7.
With that tight tolerance.
So you're right. Backseat long-haul passengers might be a little...
You know, when those all came out, when we had the first Mercedes CLS, I looked at them and thought, I said, well, they're divorced parent cars because the backseat looked like, you know, it was useless except for carrying children on the weekend when you have visitation rights. That four-door coupe-like look.
Cars,
they're not.
Two plus two.
Yeah.
Just older couples.
Older, not necessarily. older people can't bend down to get in the back seat. Speaking from experience,
why would the older people be in the back seat?
That's true.
And the Hollywood
for two people.
So you think their grandparents'
Hollywood
cars
stars and athletes
can afford
it.
All right, well, that wraps up our review of the couple of vehicles on this podcast and also our quick going over of the 2013 North American International Auto Show in Detroit. It's time now to turn to our lightning round, where all our Motor Weekers around the table have 2 minutes to debate trending automotive topics. When time's up, they're going to hear the bell from Michelle Parker, our producer. Here we go. We talked earlier about the Lincoln MKC concept at Detroit. What do you think of Lincoln's rebranding efforts? Will it reverse the decline of what was once a top-selling luxury brand in the U.S.? You know, everybody can still see lots of Navigators and Town Cars down the road, and this new lineup is very different. Is it going to be enough to save Lincoln? And I'll further throw this in. Does Ford have a choice but to save Lincoln?
I hate these kind of questions.
Because it's just totally conjecture.
Yeah. Tell us how you really feel.
Build a great product and people will buy it. It doesn't matter what you brand.
Plain and simple.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about the product. And they've got some decent product out there. We'll see how it goes.
I think they got to differentiate the stuff more away from Ford products, like they're doing with this MKC. If it's
some other way
out
than those ugly grills.
Yeah, the twin winged grill from their pre-World War II days has not transferred into modern styling very well.
And I know everyone hates on big SUVs, but they need a replacement for the Navigator.
Yeah,
they need to get it on in some rap videos and stuff, and I solve a lot of their problems.
Well, they've got the Super Bowl ad coming out. I think it's the first time Lincoln's ever done
it's
a 60-second Super Bowl ad, and they're going to use Abraham Lincoln, actually.
He popped up in one of their videos at the auto show. I wondered what that
was
about.
Well, they're going to
$4 million for
30
seconds.
They're going to draw ties to Abraham Lincoln. I think they use the words elegance and fortitude as.
Well, the interiors are beautiful, and some of their concepts, and they're okay on the production stuff, but they need something to set themselves apart.
Sooner than later.
It's going to take a while. I mean, think of how long it took Cadillac to get to the place they are now.
15 years, probably more than 15 years.
To think these rebranding efforts are going to reverse immediately it's going to take a while. Hopefully it can hang in there long enough for it to happen.
Mm-hmm. I'll answer the last part of my question. I don't think Ford has a choice. They have to have a premium brand. They have to have some place for people to go to, because history shows that Ford has not done a very good job of selling a premium car under the Ford brand.
Except for the $60,000 Platinum F-150.
That's about it. That's it. But when every time they've tried to do that with a car line, they've sold a few, but they haven't taken off. And we've had more than our share in here that were really well done, but didn't. There's just something about it. It's a mainstream brand. So we'll see. We didn't exactly answer the question, but nobody can. So,
good timing.
All right, let's go to the Motor Week mailbag. Remember, everyone out there that is listening, submit your questions. If we choose your answer, you will get a fabulous pre-shrunk, one-color-fits-all or one-size-fits-all Motor Week T-shirt. So here we go.
Shrunk it myself.
This is from Thomas, and here's what he would like to know. Is there any benefit to the large wheels with low-profile tires that have become so prevalent on trucks and SUVs other than just looks?
Yeah, they wreck your suspension. It's all about handling on sports cars anyway. I'm sure that improves handling. The bigger tire you got, the more surface area you got.
Also, your sidewalls are shorter, so they flex less in the corners.
Sure. If you need better handling, that's a benefit.
If you're looking for grip and braking, if you want to take your car through some twisties, then go for the low-profile tires. But if you're looking for acceleration, then you actually want smaller wheels. Because, every little bit, you're adding weight to your car. So
there's certainly a benefit for the manufacturer because they make a lot more money.
But if you're looking for a nice, soft, cushy ride, it's definitely a disadvantage. And if you're looking at cheap replacement cost for tires, it's a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people are astounded when they go in with these 19- and 20-inch wheels and they find that, $500 and $600, not for a set of tires, but per tire. So the trick is, if you get them on your car, anything, say, bigger than 18 inches, by the time you wear them
Make sure you don't have to park on the street if you're going to own something like this. You go downtown and downtown Baltimore, you see these trucks with these big wheels and curb rash city.
That would ruin your day. So I think the answer is, Thomas, most people probably are buying them on their car for looks. If it is a vehicle that's a handler, it obviously has some advantages. Most other cases, it's more looks than anything else.
Bling, bling.
And bling, bling, and profit for whoever puts the wheels on the vehicles. I guess that brings to a close our Motor Week podcast number 80. My special thanks to everyone sitting here in the studio with me, our executive producer, Brian Roberts, our producer, writer, and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson, our assistant producer, Greg Carlos, our associate producer, Ben Davis, over here with the baby. I'd also like to thank our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood. Now, you're stepping all over Jim's name, who makes us sound so great every week, our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, and, of course, the lady with the bell, our podcast producer, Michelle Parker. Thanks for joining us here at Motor Week's podcast. I hope you'll watch Motor Week on all your public television stations and on Velocity. I'm John Davis. Till next time, keep the sunny side up.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motorweek, television's original automotive magazine. Motorweek is made possible by rockauto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motorweek, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.